Troll Scroll.
Everybody, welcome to episode two of your Elder Scrolls Online podcast, Troll Scroll. We're glad that we have each and every one of you joining us tonight. We have a big show ahead of us. Let's see here. Man, public dungeons. What is it going to bring to our PvE experience? A couple of unique things, including perhaps RVR. And lastly, I know, you're thinking right now, wow, we're only talking about PvE and one other thing. There's a ton to talk about, guys and girls. Lastly, what is the lore of the Elder Scrolls Online, and how much impact is it going to have on our game? Should we get sort of lore savvy before we play the game? Are lore players going to have an advantage? I don't know. That's something we shall discuss. But first, Tim LaPerriere, that French guy. The Michigander.
Hey.
Bonjour.
Ciao? No. That's,
Oui.
Okay, oui. Yeah, sure.
That's the extent of my French.
Yeah, how's it going, man? What's up?
It's going great. There is not much up. There is very little up in Michigan. But in the world of Elder Scrolls in Tamriel, there's a lot. Always a lot. See what I did there?
Yeah.
What's up, dude? Not much. I'm glad. Great. I'm having a conversation with myself now. Let's jump into it before I drift off.
Yeah, for sure.
Lore.
Before we talk about public dungeons and lore, the official Elder Scrolls Online Twitter account tweeted this past week. I thought it was very intriguing. We'll release Elder Scrolls Online in 2013, no dragons at launch, but the possibility remains for later. And then in parentheses it says, check the end of this video with the little short link. I clicked on the short link. It was a Game Informer interview. And I watched towards the end of the video as they instructed. And Rich Lambert, one of the developers of the game, did say they're preparing for the potential implementation of dragons post-launch. Tim?
What?
How awesome is that?
I mean, that's great, but I mean, from a lore standpoint, granted, I don't know very much about lore, but wasn't the whole idea of Skyrim the return of dragons, the Dragonborn, and his, you know, or her existence to slay the dragon?
Oh, yeah, and I mean,
I mean, because I remember at E3, they were like, hey, are dragons going to be in this game? And they're like, no, this is quite a bit of time before Skyrim, and that's when Skyrim happens, is when the dragons, you know, that's when the dragons come back, is in Skyrim. And And I mean, well, yeah. I guess is this before they go quote unquote extinct for how many ever years it was?
Well, that's the thing. I want you to beat Skyrim so we can talk about this because once you do beat Skyrim,
it gives you some insight. I apologize for everybody that's out there that's listening and just heard that. It's on my to-do list. It's on my to-do list. Very soon to-do list. Been trying to finish up some things with school and whatnot, but yes, I plan to get back into Skyrim very shortly here.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I guess this is indeed, I think, from what I played in Skyrim, it is definitely a possibility that dragons can be implemented in this period.
Oh, all right.
So the Elder Scrolls Online, from what we do know, I know we're not going to do the lore segment right now. It takes place 1,000 years before the events of Skyrim. And I guess for all of those wondering what's going on, just remember the Dragonborn prophecy and like the whole timeline of events and such. I don't want to spoil anything.
Yeah.
But it is possible. It is possible.
Huh.
And I encourage each and every one of you to check out that Game Informer interview. It will be posted under this podcast episode. So check that stuff out. Without further ado, public dungeons. Let's talk about it. This is what we left off with from episode 1 that we recorded last week. And what we left off with talking about is that these public dungeons are these PvE encounters with bosses that are just in the open world. You can get access just in the open world. It's non-instanced content. And players can, you know, be fighting this boss. And sure enough, players from other factions could just come in midway through the boss encounter and screw your entire plan up. Tim, does this sort of sound familiar to
oh, yes, it does.
The road event on Tor?
And Tatooine, yes, with that silly Bantha and the Outlaw's Den. The only thing that Outlaw's Den was ever actually, you know, good for. Sorry, I didn't say that. No, that is exactly what that reminds me of, is for anybody that played SWTOR back in, when was the Rat Ghoul outbreak? I want to say back in the beginning of summer, this last past year. There was the three bosses on Tatooine. There was a giant Rat Ghoul that came out of a Sarlacc pit. There was the Bantha, and then there was the already world boss that was tainted himself. But there was one of them that was inside Outlaw's Den, which essentially Outlaw's Den, for anybody that doesn't know, it was a free-for-all. So anybody that wasn't in your group or in your guild could attack you, even if they were on your own faction. So what would happen is you would go in there to kill this world boss, and to kill one of them, if you killed all three, you got a title. And you would go in there with your group to attack this world boss, and players from the opposing faction or players from your faction, another operation group or raid group, would come in and attack you to kill you and then snag your world boss kill. It was really intense because I remember trying to do it. I never got that title, which kind of sucked. But, you know, I remember it was still fun because I remember sitting there, I think it was like 2.5 hours. We tried killing this world boss, and we got so close so many times, and then we would just get wiped out by the enemy faction. They just come rolling in. So you still got people trying to attack the world boss and trying to fend off enemy players at the same time, so you kind of got like two battles going on here, and then they get wiped, and then you know you guys get wiped by the mob or the boss, and then the boss goes and he wipes out them so that you come back, and it's just a huge, continuous, just never-ending cycle of just wiping. And it was a lot of fun.
Well, yeah, and the whole key to that success, I think, was the fact that the respawn timer was so long that players were desperate. They were desperate to kill that boss before the other faction. Because if they didn't succeed, there would be, what was it? Wasn't it like 4 hours? It was something, it was a ridiculous spawn time for that boss to respawn. Yep. And the incentive was just incredibly high because you needed to get that rare, those rare items that dropped in. I think that's the key here. And if they do the same thing with these public dungeons, oh man, three factions going at it. I can't imagine the carnage. I can't imagine it. It would just be insane. It would be a rage fest.
Yes.
But, yeah, this is really cool. I can't wait to do this. This is a whole totally like PvE, PvP content like meshed together spin. Really cool. Most small public dungeons located throughout the world are pretty balanced. It will be very difficult for solo players to clear the content, but it is possible. But it will be a lot easier, of course. A lot more comfortable clearing those public dungeons with a small group. Quest rewards and public boss drops are individual, specific, and linked to the player's class. This is encouraging the grouping without penalizing players by forcing them to distribute shared loot. I think that's really cool. That's unique utility. That's sort of a quality of life aspect that they're adding. There's always problems with loot drops, and if they do it that way, it's pretty fair and balanced. Additionally, many quest objectives are automatically shared with nearby players in the world to encourage cooperation, even if players don't actually form a group. I think that's something that makes Elder Scrolls Online stick out from other MMOs, is a lot of the game is going to be able to be played solo-wise, but you also got these sort of encouraging aspects and elements implemented in the game that wants you to group up with other players and stuff like that. There are no kill lockouts. If you assist... Yay. What, man?
I said yay.
Yeah, thank God. It's about time. If you assist a fellow player in slaying monsters, both of you will receive experience and quest credit even if you are not grouped. Yay again.
Yeah. that was a terrible thing. Trying to kill a quote unquote world boss in any game. Be like, dude, invite me. And the guy's just being either a douche or he doesn't speak English or he doesn't care or he didn't see it.
Yeah.
And you don't get that invite and then you have to sit there for 5-10 minutes to wait for the respawn. You're like, wow. I could be doing something else.
Yeah, isn't that the truth? And yeah, this doesn't even just pertain to public dungeons. This pertains to all questing and all PvE related content. I think that's totally great that ZeniMax Online is scourging that sort of degree of competition,
right?
That's domestic within a faction.
Right.
That was always a problem in other MMOs when, like you said, you're running around trying to get this. You need one more mob left to finish the quest, and
yeah.
you look at the other guy that's standing right next to you, and it's just like, "F you!" You just
like,
go
dude,
for
we're
it.
In the same faction. We're supposed to be working together here.
Yeah, yeah, and this is only encouraging players to work together even more, which is totally cool. I guess these public dungeons. I don't know how many of them there are going to be.
Hopefully a lot.
Yeah, yeah, for real. Do you think that these public dungeons are going to be spread throughout all of Tamriel, or sort of just around the Imperial City area where all the RVR's exploding?
Most definitely throughout the entire continent, I would assume. Just because, I mean, like, think about Warhammer. Warhammer had a lot of public quests. And it's sort of the same concept. You walk into an area. If you got close enough to the public quest, you would automatically get the quest, and it would kind of update you on what stage everybody was at, and you would go through and you would do that. And you know, it's great because, like we just talked about, it saves the whole hassle of trying to group up with people and whatnot. But I mean, yeah, all the public quests were spread throughout pretty much all of Warhammer, so. You know, wherever you go. Granted, Warhammer's PvE, I don't think I did anything PvE-wise past Tier 1, but that's, again, beside the point. I don't think their PvE was even polished, really, to be honest with you. But anyways, nonetheless.
That's true.
I mean, were there raids in that game? I'm not even sure there were raids or instances. Oh, no, I know there was instances. I did one. Anyways, the point is, that game was based around PvP, but... No, there was always that opportunity to run across players doing a public quest. And the public quests are fun. They're loads of fun because you just run up, you start doing them, and then you move on after you get your loot and reward and you move past it, you know. And whoever helps out the most, you know, gets a bigger bag. You know, there was the gold bag, the purple bag, the blue bag, the red bag, the green bag, or whatever it was, you know. And the more you contributed to the overall public quest, you know, the higher your chances were to get that gold bag. And if you got that gold bag, it usually had a really good piece of gear in it or a lot of gold or whatever, you know. So really encourages people to come in and help out, and they're a lot of fun. So, hear, hear to public quests.
Indeed. I hope these bosses for these public dungeons, I hope they drop really unique items that all players from all three factions want. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If they drop a cool rare mount, I think that will be something players would like to jump on, so to speak. Because, I mean, I know they can give you gear and such, but, you know.
Notice the word cool mount.
Yeah.
Just want to throw that out there, okay? Other MMO I've played, mounts weren't so cool, and nobody wanted to get them. That's beside the point, but I get what you're saying. I agree.
Yeah, for sure. Moving away from public dungeons and talking about just the typical instance dungeons that we're all used to, something that is reassuring is all instance dungeons for the endgame PvE will feature heroic modes, which are simply more difficult versions of the same instance content that you played when you were a lower level. These heroic dungeons, though, to make them more unique, extend the story of normal mode dungeons by adding a cinematic and challenging endgame experience. In addition, the game has large raids that pit multiple groups of people, players, against powerful and iconic bosses. So, Tim, before we talk about the raids, before we speculate on that, these instance dungeons, you know, it says that they're going to have an extended cinematic. Are they saying that it's going to be a more cinematic experience, or is there going to be like a cinematic cutscene?
Like Mass Effect 3? I'm sorry, that was really bad. I don't mean to bash BioWare on this
podcast.
That was
low, bro.
I do that a lot. I apologize, BioWare. I still love you guys.
Extended cut.
Extended cut. I hope that's not what it is. I hope it's not just like, or like Dragon Age Origins. Granted, it's still one of my favorite games, you know, but at the end, the epilogue consists of slideshows. It's like, this is what happened to this person. This is what happened to this person. This is what happened to this person. I hope that it's actually like a legit, sweet cinematic, you know.
So you do like think it's going to be a cinematic cutscene?
Yeah, I would hope it would be sweet. Something that, you know, when BioWare does do a cinematic, they always seem to do them right. And I would hope that's something, you know, ZeniMax would look at and go, wow, BioWare's got some pretty awesome cinematic, you know, story-driven cutscenes. I hope they would take something like that from that and then put that in there. So it's kind of like, after you're done, you just look at it and you're just in awe, you know. You're like, wow, that was awesome. You know, not like, ugh, sitting at school watching slideshows, because that would be totally not fun or cool.
Yeah, I'm very interested to see what ZeniMax Online does, because with other Elder Scrolls games, they don't really have cinematic cutscenes. It's more as if you are in the scene, because right. It's constantly immersive. Right. And I wonder if they're going to do it that way, or if it's just going to be, it just sort of takes you out of the game a little bit. And you're watching this video on your computer, this cinematic trailer almost of what's going on.
I like the trailers. I like the trailers personally, not to get too far off topic, but I like trailers as a, like, I still like, you know, Oblivion and Skyrim's, you know, immersed in-game kind of look. Okay. But I feel that there's more they can do with the cinematics. I feel that they can make them look more inspiring. Okay. More just like amazing. Okay, there's only so much you can do when you're sitting there with the quote-unquote in-game, you know, events or look or feel or video or whatever you want to call it, you know. I know there's a proper developer term. It's not coming to the top of my head right now, but
there's only one point of view.
Right. I feel like there's more they can do with the cinematic look, you know. So I would hope that they would go that route. Because, I mean, you're not doing anything anyways, you know, when you're doing it the Skyrim or Oblivion route, you're usually just sitting there anyways watching. You can't move your character. I mean, you can move your, you know, head around a little bit and kind of look, but with a cinematic, they can direct you to, you know, cause sometimes, you know, if you're looking forward, you know, in Skyrim, there might be like a sweet battle going overhead or whatever with dragons or, you know, or, you know, or a battle behind you between warriors or something, you know what I'm saying? and you're supposed to turn your camera around, but you don't because, you know, you don't really, you know, it's just not, you know, what you were doing at that time. You were just kind of waiting for something to happen on your screen, and, you know, you missed the action, you know, with a cinematic. Okay, cinematic's coming. I know I have to pay attention for one. Two, the camera is, it's fixed, okay, so to speak. Not really fixed, but it's out of my control, okay? I can't control it, so I have to watch whatever they put in front of me, and they can kind of direct where that cinematic goes, and you get to see all the sweet stuff that they want you to see, so. I don't know. I think a cinematic would be cool.
It gives you a better perspective of what's going on.
Sure.
You know?
Sure.
For sure. You see it from all angles, and it feels more arguably epic, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. At least I get that sense. That's just me personally, though.
I'm really excited about this. You think that perhaps the heroic dungeons, since it's endgame, do you think that maybe it will increase the number of players that participate in it? Or do you think it's still going to be... What I'm saying is, let's say these instance dungeons are five players in an instance dungeon. If they do the heroic dungeon, will it maybe be like a 25-man heroic or 15-man?
I mean, it's a possibility, right? They could totally do that, sure. I think that would be more for raids, almost. So it might be just a more difficult dungeon, okay? So kind of like how Tor has it. You know, you can do, say, Black Talon. It's the first flashpoint that you can do as a... Imperial player, but then you can do Black Talon hard mode at level 50. Exact same flashpoint, exact same everything. It's just the mobs are now level 50 and they're scaled to level 50. Plus, they're a little bit harder. Some of the mobs have, you know, some of the bosses have new mechanics to them that you have to take into consideration when, you know, going through it and stuff. So, you know, they might not up the number of players, but they will definitely up the difficulty, you know, and, obviously, with increased difficulty comes increased rewards.
Players in raids will be in multiple groups, and they will fight against powerful and iconic bosses. I'm going to speculate here. Do you think that they are referring to the Daedric Prince, is it Malbog? I think it's...
Yeah, something along those
Malbog.
Lines.
Malbog. He's the main baddie that's manipulating the Empire into sort of invading all of Tamriel. Do you think that he could possibly be one of the endgame bosses? I was thinking him, perhaps. And then we're getting the first necromancer ever. Oh gosh, I forget his name. I'll find it in a second. But the first necromancer ever is being finally introduced to Cyrodiil and all that. That's one of the huge aspects of this era and of the setting and story in The Elder Scrolls Online. But that sort of sounds similar to what they did in Warhammer Online. The players, you know, fight in the RVR lakes. They eventually get to the city. They take over the city, and then when they get inside, they get access to that PvE content. And I'm thinking that's possibly what the Daedric Prince is, probably a boss encounter, and perhaps this necromancer. I don't know. I'm just speculating. But it's sort of interesting to see this. I hope they have how many raids and dungeons, and this is including public dungeons and instance dungeons. What would you like to see at launch, Tim? How many of each?
Well, public dungeons, I mean, Warhammer had a boatload. I don't even know. A lot. That's all I can really say, is just a lot. I don't know. I mean, instanced, I think a good number. Tor had, what, 14 or 15 when it launched? I mean, you split two or three that were set for just, yeah, I think it was three per faction. So you had, what, 11 or 12 that you could do at launch for your faction. I think that was a good number. You know, and it depends on the combat level, too. You know, if the combat level is 30 or 40, 50, you know, that's, I think 11 or so is a good number to get you through. You have a couple to do each, you know, set of 10 levels or whatever. But I think anything past that might be excessive, some people might start skipping them because you don't want to have too many. You know, you don't want to start doing ones where it's like, yeah, do this one at level 22, and then you got one you can do at 24, but by the time you get out of the one that's 22, you're already 23, almost a 24, and you want to go back to doing your story, so, or your questing or whatever, and, or you do RVR or something like that, and you end up passing through, you know, the level 24 one, or, you know, whatever it is. You know, at that point, I think that might be too much for right now. So I think, I don't know, 10, 11, 12, somewhere in there. I think that's a good number.
And is that just for dungeons, or is that for raids, too?
That's just, for instance, dungeons. Raids, I would say definitely more than the 1.5 that we've seen in Tor. I know I keep going back to Tor, but I mean, it was just such a recent, you know.
You get so much hate.
It was just such a recent thing that, you know, it's easy to compare it to. I definitely think we need to see at least 2. If not 3, maybe 4. That might be too many. 4 might be too many. 3 might even be too many. I think 2 is definitely at least 2. Definitely at least 2. 3 would be good. So, 2 or 3.
I think 2 would be enough at launch if they have more of their public dungeons as right. Endgame dungeons.
Right.
You know, as max level only. For too many other MMOs, they have dungeons almost overwhelmingly spread out across the leveling levels up to cap, where players mm-hmm. don't even take the time to do that because they're just in a race to get to the max level. It's sort of not beneficial for either party. So maybe they should have more dungeons in the end game, perhaps. Just a thought.
Right.
Just a thought. I know we talked about, I speculated on perhaps who these iconic bosses may be. So I guess we'll make the transition now into the lore of Elder Scrolls Online. I found the name of the first necromancer. His name's, and I'm going to kill the pronunciation, so I apologize. Manny Marco, King of Worms.
Nice.
He is Manny. The one that's pretty much supplying the constant supply of reanimating dead souls. And these are like being used as the Imperial armies that the Daedric Prince, Molag Bal, is using to fight all the players, all of us. Which is pretty cool, I think. They're sort of conspiring together. And I was thinking about that a little while ago. You know, there's 3 factions that want the throne, okay? You got Molag Bal, the Daedric Prince, who wants the throne. It's almost going to be like Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
You got all these players, and you got to think about it. Even within each faction, there's going to be so much competition within each faction about who wants to be emperor and leader of their faction. So it might be so deep in the conflict over the throne. Not only do you need to get your faction to the position where they can take the throne, but there's going to be conflict of who does take over the throne of your faction.
Right.
Which is, oh man, it's going to be, right. It's going to be awesome.
I mean, players take over, you know what I'm saying? I mean, game mechanic wise, but story related, yeah, there's going to be a lot of, you know, political pushing and shoving kind of, I at least I would assume so.
Well, and we know that the player with the most war assets, I don't even know what that means. It's so vague about what we know about the war assets. It's pretty much the player who contributes most
in RVR.
In RVR, which I don't know how you can contribute most in RVR. Like, what is that?
Most kills, I guess, setting up siege weapons. I think they said something like setting up siege weapons, perhaps using the siege weapons, helping, you know, how many keeps you've taken over, how many keep, you know, perhaps bosses that you've slain, so on and so forth, stuff like that. Yeah, that's kind of, I think, what War Assets is. It's just a pool of everything that you've done in RVR.
Do you think that it could come down to if they allow guilds to claim keeps? Do you think that could be a huge asset contributing to your war assets?
Perhaps.
Maybe like if your guild claims all of the keeps, that's a ton of contribution to the effort, and your guild leader becomes emperor. That's what I'm saying. This could be like, I don't know, it's so vague, and I hate to speculate on this because it's such an important aspect of this game, and it's so delicate on what we know, but it just blows me away. Going back back to lore. Sorry, we got off topic there. Like I said before, Elder Scrolls Online is set approximately 1,000 years before Skyrim. It's during the Second Era. It's an unexplored period of the Elder Scrolls timeline, so it's pretty new, this aspect of lore. The timeline is known as the Interregnum, and I'm pretty sure I destroyed that pronunciation as well. this period is marked as a period of great conflict in Tamriel. Three factions going for the throne, no shit. But the primary force of evil driving the plot events of Teso is Moloch Baal. He's the Daedric Prince of Domination. He wants Tamriel to subject themselves under his will. So he's the total baddie. Tim, what do you remember anything about the Daedric Princes at all? Do you know anything about them? If you don't, it's fine.
If you don't, you'll just look like an idiot. I know the whole thing with Oblivion and stuff, that they each have like their own plane of Oblivion to rule over, and they're neither what, male or female, they're just called princes. And they're not all evil, so to speak, they're all sort of different, and some of them are very evil, some of them are nice, some of them don't care. I know a little bit when it comes to Daedric Princes, just from Oblivion and Skyrim, and talking to some friends, but I mean, I have a good idea.
Yeah, I know. I've barely played Oblivion. I've played a lot of Skyrim. If you play Skyrim, sometimes when there's a loading screen, like that will be like a tip. It talks about, oh, this Daedric Prince, blah 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 blah. He's the Prince of blah blah blah. I don't know that much about the Daedric Princes either. It's almost like they're like saints, where they're saints of something. You know what I'm saying?
I don't know about saints. I mean, saints are...
Well, I mean, they're not... I'm not saying that they're good like saints. but like, St. Patrick is the... Isn't he the saint of animals or something? He's like...
I don't know. Let's compare them to Roman gods.
Well, I'm just saying, like,
let's go with Greek mythology.
Okay. my point is they specialize in something that they're
specialized
reigning over.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. Any of the other Daedric
masters in screwing with people's head
besides Moloch Baal are going to be in the game to some capacity. ZeniMax Online has stated players shouldn't expect to at all receive any powerful collection of Daedric artifacts.
Oh. That was the best part in the Skyrim. I got like four or five just chilling in my house.
Oh, man.
Yeah. I'm a boss.
Why do you think they did that? Did the artifacts, they give you
definitely
pretty big
strong
advantage?
I mean, besides, I mean, it wouldn't be as special, I guess you could say, if everybody's running around with, like, you know, the hammer of such and such Daedric Prince, or, you know, the scythe of, or the horse of the steed, or something like that. The helmet of, if everybody's seen that, it's just like, oh.
So it breaks your immersion.
I don't even know about breaks your immersion. It's just like, oh, that Daedric Prince is handing him out like candy. Yeah. You know, I went around and I had to slay 15 world bosses to get this thing, and oh, never mind. Yeah. I guess you could say it breaks your immersion.
I mean, doesn't that break your immersion?
But I mean, you know, to an MMO though, I mean, that stuff, you know, you always, I don't know.
See,
I just think it's more of an overpowered thing, because when you think of a Daedric weapon, you think it's probably gonna have some super sweet powers, and in an MMO, they obviously can't make, you know, chance on strike to one hit kill, you know, because that would be sort of dumb if you're just running around in RVR and some guy comes up to you with a butter knife and he's like, and you die, you know, all of a sudden 25k health is gone and you're just like, cool story.
Just got killed by a Daedric Prince.
Just got killed.
Great.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go to bed.
Yeah. I see where you're coming from. And if they had a problem with inflation of these artifacts that are controlled, You know, if everyone's super powerful, then no one's super powerful, right?
Right.
So
it's just sort of, you know, sad story.
I'm relieved that ZeniMax Online Studios is not allowing this to occur. And I think that's something else I want to talk about. I feel like ZeniMax Online Studios is really, really, really trying to have this game be very immersive. And the reason I say that is because they are even focusing lore-wise on why players can die and resurrect.
Right.
Which I think is pretty cool. But basically, you know, all characters in any MMO, when you die, you can resurrect in most MMOs. Some MMOs, if you don't...
Really?
You know, some MMOs, if you die, you could lose your stuff. And if you play games...
You still get resurrected,
like,
though,
EVE Online, you're, like, screwed.
You get cloned in EVE.
Yeah. You got to be responsible with it. But basically, Molag Bal, who is the main antagonist in The Elder Scrolls Online, did something where he stole your soul, and when you die, that's the explanation why you can resurrect, is because you just can. You're immortal, almost, because you're soulless, I guess.
I don't have a heart or a soul.
Yeah.
If I only had a soul.
Yeah, so...
I'm sorry.
That's pretty cool. Another thing going on here, this is sort of focused on the Ebonheart Pact. They're getting sort of some love here, I think. You know, a lot of people are saying that the Ebonheart Pact has a disadvantage because their territory in the Elder Scrolls Online is going to be the smallest at launch. Their territory is in, and their land that they're within is going to be the smallest compared to the Altmeri Dominion and the Daggerfall Covenant. But they get something that's really cool. The Akavari invasion just occurs before the time frame of this MMORPG and serves as the political motivation for the formation of the factions and players within the Ebonheart Pact. The races and players, pardon me. The repercussions of this invasion are still being resolved during the scope of TESO. But Tim, I think we could speculate here that that's probably going to be the Ebonheart Pact's almost world arc or story arc in their territory.
Sure.
Do you agree?
Yeah.
I think that's pretty cool. The Akavari invasion. The Akavari invasion, I'm going to look that up right now and see what that is. Meanwhile, Tim LaPerrier.
Oh, God. It's going to entertain you.
You're going to fill us in. What faction do you want to be? And why? Is there a specific reason why you want to play that faction? Does it have to do with the lore of why you're choosing that faction? Fill me in.
I guess I'm going to be playing the Altmeri Dominion because... Ooh. Well, elves are cool. No, I'm kidding. Really, elves are kind of cool, but that's not why I'm playing them. I don't know. I usually play as a human in MMOs in any game. Okay, Oblivion, Skyrim, Tor, World of Warcraft, Warhammer, the list goes on. Every single MMO that I have ever played, any game that I play, I always play as a human. Okay? And if we were allowed to play as Imperials, I would probably play as an Imperial. I'm not playing as a Redguard or a Breton or a Nord or anything, just because, I mean, I played as all three of those in between Oblivion and Skyrim. So, I don't know, I guess it's just me trying to think of something different to play, you know, and the Altmeri Dominion seems like it's got, you know, I guess you could say it's head on straight for the most part. It's disciplined. They're intellectuals. And,
wasn't it the Altmer that brought language to the continent? I'm pretty sure they're ones that started the language.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
And gave it to everyone.
I mean, they're smart people. You know what I'm saying? They're smart people.
They deserve the throne.
Right. And I'm not saying that I'm smart. Okay. I mean, I like to think that I have a good head on my shoulders and I know my way around the block. that came out wrong, but I know what's going on in life. I should say that. I like to think that I have some type of wisdom, but no, I don't know. I guess part of me wants something that's not too far from humans, you know, like an orc. Okay, so I guess elves are still similar enough to humans, but they're different at the same time, and, you know, just with everything that's going on with the faction and whatnot, I just think that's my cup of tea. So, that's why I'm playing them.
Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah. Thank you.
I think, you know, reading up on the factions within Elder Scrolls Online, Ebonheart Pact, Daggerfall Covenant, and the Altmeri Dominion, it seems like the Ebonheart Pack and Daggerfall Covenant, they've joined together because of necessity, whereas the Altmeri Dominion joined together because they're friends. They've always, you know, encouraged an alliance between each other. Where, you know, the Ebonheart Pact, they joined together because they needed to fight off the Akavir race. I was destroying the pronunciation before, because they were the Akavir race. They were invading Tamriel from the north, and that's where the Ebonheart Pact is located. So those three races got together, and that's why they, you know, aligned with themselves. I don't think they would have aligned with themselves if they weren't under siege by that common enemy. So the enemy of my enemy is my friend, sort of, is the philosophy, it seems, behind the alliance of the Daggerfall Covenant and Ebonheart Pact. And I think that's sort of cool that the Altmeri Dominion are just like, you know what? Khajiit, Altmer, Bosmer, we're all friends here. Let's just be an alliance. Where the other guys are like, ugh, fine, I guess we'll join you just because we have this common enemy. You know what I'm saying? I think that sort of gives the Altmeri Dominion maybe a little bit of an advantage.
Sure.
However, it did say that,
I mean, story-wise,
the Altmeri Dominion, between the races do prioritize their domestic issues. So if the Khajiit are having problems on their home front, they prioritize that over the whole Altmeri Dominion. But isn't that normal? Isn't that what every country, even in real life, does? So,
right.
I don't see that as a total cutting disadvantage. I just think that's realistic. The Akavir race, who are probably going to be seen, I'm assuming, in the Ebonheart Pack, like starting area, perhaps that's going to be the conflict that you're engulfed in. These guys came from a continent called Akavir. They spoke the language known as Akavari, and there are several theories that the men of the Akavir died out long ago. That they were eaten by Tasaki. Oh my god. This is terrible.
You are so good at this. Just keep going.
The Tasaki were these, like, half man, half snake creatures. Sort of gross.
Sure.
You know, a centaur's half man, half horse. I guess these Tasaki are half man, half snake. And apparently they just are believed to have wiped out these people, the Avari, Akavari, that are threatening the Ebonheart Pact. Jumping back to the lore, Tim, do you think that players who are more knowledgeable, let's say, of you and I, with the lore,
doesn't take much,
with the lore and Elder Scrolls Online, do you think that they're going to have an advantage when they're playing?
No. I mean, you didn't have an advantage in Tor, and I'm not actually going back to Bash Tor this time. The one thing that Tor did really well was implemented story on a very serious level into MMOs. And honestly, you know, you didn't need to know really anything about Star Wars to get into the Star Wars, the story in SWTOR. You know, even playing KOTOR 1 and KOTOR 2, you know, people are thinking, oh, that might give you an advantage. It really didn't. Okay, I mean, there was, like, a couple flashpoints, four flashpoints that were really restricted to your faction. So it was, you know, two for each faction. that had something to do with KOTOR, you know, and that was really it. So honestly, it's not like you get an advantage. I mean, you really can't. I mean, how does, like, in lore, you know, in RVR, how does knowing lore, I guess, give you an advantage? You know, like, I don't know, I'm trying to think of something sarcastic and witty to say, but I can't even come up with something. You know, like, knowing that, you know, playing as an elf, knowing that orcs don't like being punched in the nose.
I got one.
Because of lore. I mean, do you know that if you, like, target their head or something like that, you do more damage? I really don't think so. No.
Starve the Argonian players. Keep them away from the water.
There you go, right? There you go.
No, that's terrible.
There you go. Just keep them away from the water, and they'll shrivel up and die. I wonder, are they going to have underwater breathing? Is there even swimming confirmed? Swimming confirmed.
In Skyrim, if swimming confirmed.
Well, in Oblivion and Skyrim, you had underwater breathing for Argonians. They,
I don't know, Tim. The engine might not be able to handle swimming in Elder Scrolls Online. I don't know. We'll have to see.
Okay. Because if I'm told that I have to, you know, swim across a huge lake and possibly take a boat to get back, but then when I get to that lake and it's only ankle deep, I'm going to be pissed off. Not that ever happened before in any other MMO.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, guys and gals, Tim and I will admit, we are not really lore sound on the Elder Scrolls Online. However, this is a topic that we can definitely come back to. I can try looking into it more and seeing
I will look
if
into
I can
it
make
more.
Some more sense out of all of this. But I also think ZeniMax Online Studios, when they release a cinematic trailer, and I'm sure they're going to release a cinematic trailer. Their teaser, E3 teaser trailer, was a cinematic, and I'm sure the E3 teaser trailer is going to be like the full-fledged cinematic trailer once it does release. Maybe we'll get some insight on how lore works by the cinematic trailer, but maybe we'll get a better understanding. That's just speculation. That's what we've seen with other MMOs. Cinematic trailers told a lot about the story and the setting and the time and era the game takes place. Perhaps that will be the case with Elder Scrolls Online. Tim, let's talk about NPC guilds. So, from the Council, Elder Scroll games we played, what are some guilds we know of?
Dark Brotherhood.
Dark Brotherhood. Thieves
Guild. Fighter Guild.
What did you say?
Mages Guild. The Fighters Guild. The Thieves Guild. The Mages Guild.
Where could you go? The Bard's College. Isn't that a guild?
Oh, I mean, that's really...
it's a joke of a guild. Don't give me
wrong. I got... Okay, so see, the thing about the Bard's College is I think it's a complete scam, because what I found funny is that you go there to learn how to sing and such. They're like, oh, dude, I need to get a poem. They're like, all right, you know, I'll go get you a poem. I don't know why I'm just not going to write you a poem. You know, I'm supposed to be a bard. But I'll go get you a poem. And then they send you to a dungeon, and you have to kill off, like, draugrs and stuff. And you're like, this is something for, like, the companions, okay? This isn't for a bard. I have, like, this ukulele, okay? What are you, a lyre, sorry. What do you want me to do with, you know... I don't know. I just, the whole Bard's College thing never sat right in my, sat right for me. But that was completely off topic. I apologize for that. Yes, the Bard's College, I guess.
I don't know if we'll see the Bard's College in Elder Scrolls Online, but,
I don't know. That'd be kind of a cool profession, I guess, if players could take that up, join the Bard's College, and then they could just entertain in the streets. I would totally do that just to be fun.
You know what I'm saying? It could be like the entertainer class in SWG when you're like wounded
just
or you have
around.
Like
I mean just dancing and stuff.
Res sickness. You go walk by them.
Let me play you a song. And
you heal
them. La, 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 la. And then like all of a sudden it's just gone. You're just like, yeah, it's pretty sweet. You got some.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
Sweet tunes there. You know what I'm saying? Have concerts.
That would almost be like a mini game.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, mini games. Let's talk about mini games. Just kidding. Just kidding.
The player will be able to at least join one, maybe more, of these iconic guilds.
Woot!
In order to join these guilds, however, you must prove yourself worthy.
Which one do you think is going to be the most populated?
Dark Brotherhood.
You're going to be so many assassins.
You're going to be walking around in the Imperial City, and you're going to look up, and there's just players in shrouded gear
just staring at you, and you're just like hey, okay, and then you just guys. Move, and there's just like 40 guys running across his rooftop. You're just like, am I playing Assassin's Creed Brotherhood?
Yeah, that's going to suck.
Sweet. Now my question is, are you going to be able to join this guild? And then if you join this guild, it's going to be a guild that's like across faction. So like, is it like there's a fighter's guild just for one faction, there's a fighter's guild for another faction, a fighter's guild for another, or is it going to be like, hey, you're part of the Dark Brotherhood now. We're all brothers, so we're not going to hurt each other in this sense. I mean, in RVR, you know, I guess that's a different story. You're fighting for the throne, but are there going to be some parts that if somebody's in the same guild as you are? Because, like, if you join the Thieves Guild, right, I believe, I don't know if they follow the same rules as they did in Oblivion, but you can't kill anybody, especially and in the Brotherhood, too. That's one of the five tenets. You can't kill somebody that's in the Dark Brotherhood. So is that going to be something that's going to be, like, controversial, or are they just going to be like, yeah.
It's pretty deep, bro.
I don't know. That's just something that kind of, I guess.
It's really deep. I know in Skyrim, the Dark Brotherhood was very, they were sort of letting go of the traditional ways.
Yeah, let's
by Night Mother and stuff. Dark Brotherhood. But now we're in that era where the traditional ways may actually matter immensely to what's going on with the current setting and with that guild. With the Dark Brotherhood, you know, I believe Astrid like warned you. She's like, I don't know if it was Astrid. Who's the guy who always gives you the contracts? I forget his name. He's the black guy, the red guard.
Oh, yeah, I know who you're talking about.
He told you. He's like, he gave you a warning before giving you a contract that I won't talk about and spoil. That, you know, your allegiance and your access to these cities / forts that your contract is at. Your access can be impacted by your actions of doing this contract. I don't know if they can take it that deep with an MMORPG, but you make a great point. Like, if they have to have separate cells for each guild in each continent, or not continent, territory. That's what I'm assuming. Because if they don't do that, that contradicts itself lore-wise. Maybe.
I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe you just disguise yourself of not. I don't know. It's stupid. It doesn't seem.
Need more information.
Maybe they won't be that serious about lore, but I find it hard to believe because they're taking lore so seriously in this game.
Right.
Down to
let's see.
Aspect of the character. The Fighters Guild is predominantly interested in repelling the attempts of Moloch Ba to dominate Tamriel.
Oh, I'm glad.
By destroying the demonic dark anchors that Moloch Ba sends forth from his plane of Cold Harbor, the player can gain favor with the Fighters Guild.
But the Mage's Guild?
Mage's Guild works to collect and catalog the many arcane tomes, which are scattered across Tamriel. By finding and collecting these books, a player can become more ingratiated with the Mage's Guild.
Great.
So,
I'm sorry.
I mean, it sounds like archaeology.
All right.
From other MMORPGs.
Sweet.
But, yeah.
Sweet.
The Thieves Guild will be in the game. But we don't know yet how you can become a part of this guild or what that entails of being a member in this guild. And the Dark Brotherhood, the same thing. We don't know yet that many details on how that will work. Do you think How cool do you think it would be if you joined the Dark Brotherhood and they gave you, like, a bounty of a player?
That would be awesome. Wow.
That would be really cool. I'm sure it's not going to happen.
Go kill this guy. Okay. Sure.
Oh, man.
Running around.
I want to see something like that in an MMO RPG. I just want to see that element of... It's like a sandbox element that's unique to your player community, where players can actually have this sort of bounty tracking system. Oh, that would be awesome. I don't know why games haven't done that yet.
It causes griefing, I guess, if you're running around and all of a sudden some random dude just comes up and slays you for no reason. But, I mean, if you're... on a PvP server, what are they going to do? Okay, anytime you leave your main city, somebody could do that to you, so it's not a big deal. But on a PvE server, I can see people being like, what the heck? You know? Like, and they have that right, you know, to complain about that, or rant, as I should say, just because, I mean, they're on a PvE server, okay? They shouldn't have to worry about leaving a, you know, city and then potentially being sniped by some random character that just, player character that just comes up to you and is like, hey, guess what? Huh. I'm getting 15 gold for this. What? You're dead. And the next thing you know, you're next to some guy who's playing the lyre, dancing for you to get rid of your red sickness.
I mean, do you think that if they only made the bounty system, if they had a bounty system, if they only made it plausible in the RVR lakes, that would be acceptable? Because people are going to have to PvP.
Okay, yeah, PvE I can see that.
Too.
Yeah, if there was only in the RVR lake, sure. But then it kind of takes out the point of assassination if you are, you know, like, I mean,
you're just in a battle of,
if you're like, sweet, that's my enemy, and you start charging him down and you have a Zerg behind you and he's just like, it's not really an assassination at that point. It's just it's a gang beating. You know what I'm saying?
It's a massacre.
It's not really fair.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I guess that makes sense. It makes a lot of sense. I don't know. Maybe if they just had like this aspect of gameplay available on PvP servers, and if you want
to PvP servers or PvE servers, and you had to join up, you know, you had to be like, hey, this is something I want to do, you know, and then go from there.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe if you want to participate in the bounty hunter system, you need to always be flagged for PvP, no matter where you are. If you don't want to participate in the bounty system, then you can never have a bounty on your head. I don't know. Maybe it's just a thought. I think that's really cool. How many guilds do you think they should let you become a part of? Do you think it should be all guilds? One guild?
Every other game you could. I always just found it funny, though, because, like, not to spoil it for anybody, but, I mean, everybody knows that's played those two games, at least, or the most recent Elder Scrolls games, that, you know what rank you obtain within the guilds by the time you're done with the guild's quest line. So it's like, you're this figure, so to speak, with this particular rank in each of the guilds, and you're just like, yeah, I pretty much run Cyrodiil, or I run Skyrim, because I'm the best that there is. You know, it's just kind of weird to me. But, you know, I would assume, I don't know. I'm assuming that you're not going to obtain a rank that high, so to speak, in Elder Scrolls Online, just because it's an MMO, and it wouldn't make sense at that point. But I could see maybe joining two, I think would be fair. You know, somebody that wants to join, like, you know, say,
I feel you.
The Brotherhood and the Thieves Guild, because, you know, they're in cahoots with each other in Skyrim. Not to ruin anything or spoil anything, but, you know, they're in cahoots with each other. But, you know, you can't join, like, the Thieves Guild and then join the Fighters Guild, because Fighters Guild, you have to have a clean record. You know what I'm saying? So there'd be some limitations there, too, I guess.
Indeed, and maybe, you know, that would be pretty weird if, like, you rise all the way up to the highest rank of the Mage Guild and, you know, one of the mages finds out that you're also the leader of the Dark Brotherhood. That would be messed up. That would be that'd be really weird. Sort
of awkward conversation.
It's like, oh, President Barack Obama, you're president of the United States. Oh, you're also president of Russia.
Cool. Cool. That makes sense.
It's essentially Palpatine.
Yeah, exactly.
Essentially Palpatine. Exactly. It's exactly Palpatine. Hi, I'm the Emperor of the Sith. Hi, I'm also Supreme Chancellor of the Republic. Wait a minute. Aren't those two factions warring? Yes.
Yeah. Oh, man. Crazy. I would like to talk about this more on next episode of Trollscroll. Before we do end, we do have a couple mailtime questions. These are the first questions we've been given to answer on this show. So, guys and girls, just keep in mind, we record once a week our podcast. If you tweet at Real Trollscroll, you can tweet whenever you want, and we'll answer them on the show as long as they're, you know, fairly appropriate. Pardon me.
If they're inappropriate,
we'll answer them on the show. So feel free to do that. If you don't have Twitter, you can just write your question out on our Trollscroll Facebook page. If you don't have Facebook, you can go to our Contact Us, page on trollscroll.com. And
if you don't have an email, well,
I don't know. I don't even know.
I mean, I guess you could do it in the comments section under the latest episode. And if you don't have internet access, then I really don't know how you're listening to this podcast.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was just going to say, man. That's pretty deep. We got two questions, I believe.
Woot.
This is from Atropos. Good guy. He's from Tamriel Foundry. He sent us the question. His first question is, how do you think ZeniMax Online Studios would design their public dungeons to mitigate these downsides? And the downsides could be how rare or valuable the loot is that these public bosses yield. If it's good enough, you are going to have a squabbling, spawn camping, and kill stealing. But, you know, is that really a downside that should maybe be considered when they do these public dungeons? Tim, I know you and I talked about the sort of desperation and the incentive and the intensity adds to how fun the experience is and how unique the experience is. Do you think that ZeniMax Online should mitigate something in a way or focus on, I don't know, making this balanced? Or should it be a desperate battle? I think that's what I was trying to say.
Well, yeah, I think it adds a lot to it if it is a desperate battle, just because it's something fun. It clashes both PvP and PvE together, and in some senses that's good. So I think for certain bosses, sure. Okay, I think there should be some dungeons that are specifically noted as, you know, these are PvE/PvP dungeons, yada yada yada. You can be interrupted by another faction. Okay. But on the flip side, I could see where, you know, some might not have to be or shouldn't be, just because, you know, PvEers, they want to do PvE, okay? And they play on a PvE server for a reason, or, you know, if they're playing on a PvP server, you know, you still shouldn't force them into doing complete PvP in certain points. You know, obviously if it's on PvP server, they, you know, obviously if you leave your safe zone, you're fair game. But at some point, you know, maybe not, I guess maybe not so much on a PvP server just because it's a PvP server, so I take that back. But just, I think there needs to be a line at some point that PvP should be PvP and PvE should be PvE. But I definitely think, you know, having some of these dungeons, even if it's a majority or a good chunk of these dungeons, you know, where PvP and PvE have to clash, I think that would be good because it adds that extra element of challenge. You know, and players, when it comes down to it, players really do like challenge in the end. Because then, you know, if it's not challenging enough, players burn through the content too quickly, and if they burn through the content too quickly, then they're done with the game, and they're sitting there at end game going, I've already done all this, okay, I'm bored, I'm unsubscribing, moving on to the next game. And then you start to lose subscribers, and you don't get any more content, or you don't get any more cash flow, and since you're having more cash flow, you have to start firing developers, and when you start firing developers, you start losing content. When you start losing content, you lose even more players, and then your game goes into a spiral downwards. I think all of that can be avoided if they make some things challenging. That's sort of a joke. Don't don't take everything I just said completely seriously. But no, really, I think there needs to be that element of challenge in some of these dungeons. So
I agree.
I guess I'm on the fence, sort of. But
I agree
in a way.
I really don't want ZeniMax Online Studios to get too involved with this on making it a sort of fair or balanced field. That's why it's a public dungeon.
Right.
It's wartime. In war, what are the rules? Maybe there's an honor code. Maybe Palais. I don't know.
No,
I don't think they have that in Elder Scrolls Online. I think it's like, take the spoils.
Well, that was good.
So I agree. I don't think that there should be regulation, so to speak, on this type of PvE gameplay. Estrapo also acknowledges that, Tim, you and I haven't played Dark Age of Camelot, but he said that the best public dungeon in any MMO ever was Darkness Falls. What do you think about the prospect of a public RVR dungeon showing up in Cyrodiil? Of course. I think there will be one. I think that's very probable.
Yeah. I mean, they made Dark Age of Camelot, essentially. Okay, it's the same guys. Not the same company, but same guys that made up that other company, right? And
When you say that the public dungeon, well, no, I shouldn't say that. I was going to say that the Imperial City is sort of the access to that PvE content. Whoever takes the Imperial City, you know, takes the Imperial City, and they also have the opportunity to fight Molag Bal and that Necromancer guy, who I think are really going to be bosses for that content. I don't know. Just speculation. I think it's probable.
I agree.
Okay. Guys and Gales, episode number two.
Two.
So dose.
Dose.
Of your Troll Scroll Elder Scrolls Online podcast. Thank you for joining us.
Yes.
The lore segment was a
bit dodgy.
Obviously.
Sketchy.
Obviously, I was very amateur. I beg for your forgiveness. We're going to try to enhance our knowledge on this topic.
Now, let's do that.
With the Elder Scrolls Online, and this is something that we will definitely come back to in the future, either in the near or long-term future. I don't know. We'll have to see when lore does come up. But the public dungeon system, extremely, it's not innovative, but it's something that's unique that should, I think, be implemented in more of these new MMORPGs. It adds a new sort of tier of competition that players can compete with, PvE and PvP wise. Tim, thanks for joining me on the show, man. Any last comments?
Can't wait to talk to you guys next week. Yeah.
Next week.
Next week.
Episode 3. Tune in.
Trace.
Next Friday. Be there.
Be there.
Farewell.
Goodbye.
Oh, before I leave, www.trollscroll.com. Follow us on Twitter at RealTrollScroll. And Tim, tell them about Facebook.
Well, we would like it. Wait, I screwed that up. This is why I don't do it. We would love it if you would like us on Facebook at TrollScroll.
This is true.
Because it would be fun.
This is very true.
And you can get some updates, which are great.
Guys and gals, have a safe weekend. Be good.
See you later.